Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we dig into complex research to pull out the insights you need. Today, we're tackling something really cool in material science, basically trying to get two materials that don't naturally get along to form a perfect bond.
That's a great way to put it. We're talking about joining a very high-strength aluminum alloy, AA2014T6. That's the kind of stuff you find in aircraft structures. Really demanding applications with AA5052H32.
And that one's different.
Oh, completely different. It's known for its excellent corrosion resistance, much more formable. Think marine parts, automotive panels. So you've got strength versus endurance against the elements.
Okay, so you want the best of both worlds, right? Yep. Strength from one, corrosion protection from the other. Maybe in the same part. But welding them sounds like a nightmare. Especially that high strength one. Doesn't melting it cause huge problems?
Exactly right. Traditional welding, where you melt the metals, is, well, a disaster for alloys like the 2000 series aluminum. You get porosity, cracking. The heat just ruins the carefully engineered microstructure that gives it strength.
So melting is out. What's the alternative?
Friction stir welding. FSW. This is the game changer here. It's a solid state process.
Solid state meaning no melting.
No melting at all. Imagine our really hard, non-consumable tool spinning very fast and plunging into the joint line between the two metals. The friction generates intense heat, but controlled heat below melting point. And the tool's rotation literally stirs the softened, plasticized metal together.
Like a high-tech kneading process.
That's a good analogy. Because it stays solid, you avoid all those melting-related defects, the resulting joints. They tend to have much better tensile strength, better fatigue life. It's critical for things like aircraft fuselages, rocket fuel tanks, car parts that need to be light but strong.
Okay, but it sounds incredibly precise.
Yeah.
You said controlled heat.
Utterly precise. The quality of that final weld, its integrity, it hinges entirely on getting the process parameters exactly right. Tool shape, plunge depth, how fast you move along the seam, and crucially, how fast that tool is spinning.
Right, and that spin speed, tool rotation speed, or TRS, is what we're focusing on today.
That's our mission for this deep dive. We're looking at research that isolated just this one variable, TRS, to find the sweet spot for joining these two dissimilar alloys. They tested speeds from 860 RPM up to 1460 RPM, keeping everything else constant.
To find that Goldilocks zone. Okay, let's quickly recap the materials themselves. AA2014T6, the strong one. How strong are we talking?
We're talking an ultimate tensile strength, its breaking point, of about 468 megapascals MPa. And it's quite hard, around 162 on the Vickers hardness scale, HV.
That's your structural backbone.
Definitely. Now, compare that to the AA5052H32. Its strength is much lower, around 225 MPa, and hardness is only 78 HV. But it brings that corrosion resistance and formability. You can see how different they are.
Hugely different. Over double the strength and hardness in the 2014. So the setup for the weld must matter a lot, too.
It does. And this is clever. The researchers placed the harder alloy, the AA2014, on what's called the advancing side of the weld tool.
Advancing side. What does that mean, and why put the tough stuff there?
So as the tool spins and moves forward, one side experiences the tool rotating in the same direction as the travel, that's the advancing side. The other side, the retreating side, sees the tool rotating against the direction of travel. The advancing side generally sees more heat and more vigorous material movement.
Ah, okay.
By putting the harder, tougher to soften AA2014 there, you ensure it gets the maximum thermal and mechanical action needed to make it plasticize and flow properly with the softer FIX5032. It's strategic.
Makes sense. You force the difficult one to cooperate. And they knew the limits already, right? Going too slow or too fast was bad news.
Yeah, initial trials below 860, like 760 RPM, or above 1460, like 1560 RPM, the paper described the results as colossal defects. So they zeroed in on that 860 to 1460 RPM range as the potentially workable window.
Okay, so TRS controls the heat. And you mentioned earlier research showing moderate speeds are good.
That's right. Generally, speeds in the, say, 800 to 1200 RPM range are often found to promote something called dynamic recrystallization.
Dynamic recrystallization. Sounds important. What is it, simply?
It's basically the magic of FSW. The intense deformation and heat cause the material's internal grain structure to reform itself during the process. Old, potentially large grains get broken down and replaced by new, very fine, uniform grains. Think of it like refining the metal on the fly.
And fine grains generally mean better properties. like strength.
Exactly. Finer grains usually lead to higher strength and toughness. But if you spin the tool too fast, you generate excessive heat.
And too much heat is bad because
it causes those newly formed fine grains to immediately start growing larger again. That's grain coarsening. It can also dissolve important strengthening phases within the alloy. Both effects make the weld weaker. So there's a balance.
The thermal tightrope. Okay, let's look at the evidence. The study found 860 RPM was optimal. What did the microscope reveal inside that perfect weld?
At 860 RPM, things looked, well, pretty much ideal. Visually, the weld surface was smooth, no signs of defects like tunnels or voids. That tells you the material flow was excellent, well consolidated.
And inside, those grains.
Inside the main stir zone, or the nugget zone, where all the action happens, they saw fine equiaxed grains. Equiaxed just means they're roughly the same dimension in all directions, which is good. And they were small, averaging about 11.8 micrometers. That's the dynamic recrystallization we were talking about.
Okay, nice structure.
Yeah.
What of the mixing of the two different alloys? Was it uniform?
It was well mixed, but interestingly, not completely homogenized. You could still see where the original materials were. The magnesium, mostly from the 5052, was present throughout the stir zone, but more concentrated near the 5052 side, the copper from the 2014.
That's the key strength center 2014.
Absolutely. The copper wasn't just dissolved evenly. It formed these discrete spots or particles within the stir zone. Analysis showed these were likely intermetallic compounds like aluro.
And those are good, like little reinforcements.
Precisely. They act like tiny reinforcing bars within the alumina matrix, precipitation hardening. The crucial thing is 860 RPM generated enough heat to mix the materials and allow these to form, but not so much heat that it dissolved them or made them ineffective.
So 860 RPM, enough heat and force to mix, refine the grains, and keep the strengthening bits intact. The Goldilocks speed.
You got it. Now let's crank up the speed. What happened at 1160 RPM and especially at 1460 RPM?
I'm guessing things started to go wrong. More heat.
A lot more heat. And the consequences were immediate. On the outside, the weld surfaces became rougher and they saw significant flash formation.
Flash. Like excess material squeezing out.
Exactly. Too much heat makes the metal overly soft, almost like toothpaste, and the tool just pushes it out sideways instead of consolidating it properly. That's wasted material and indicates poor process control.
Okay, that's the outside. What about the inside, the grains?
Grain coarsening. As speed increased, the average grain size in the stir zone grew. At 1160 RPM, it was larger, and by 1460 RPM, it had increased to about 15.7 micrometers. That's a noticeable jump from the 11.8 micrometers at 860 RPM.
Because of the extra heat letting them grow.
Directly due to the higher peak temperatures reached at those faster rotation speeds, heat fuels grain growth. And remember, larger grains generally mean lower strength.
So the structure itself is getting weaker. Any other damage?
Oh, yes. At 1460 RPM, the zone just outside the main stir zone, the thermomechanically affected zone, or TMAZ, it showed signs of severe thermal damage. The material flow looked chaotic, they observed voids, even microcracks starting to form. The excessive heat basically oversoftened everything, preventing proper consolidation.
So spinning faster doesn't just stir better, it actually starts to cook and damage the material at a micro level. Let's connect this to performance. Hardness first, how did that change?
They measured hardness across the weld joint. Typically, you see this W-shaped profile. Hardness drops in the heat-affected zones, HAZs, on either side of the weld, then peaks up again in the stir zone, SE, due to the grain refinement.
Did they see that W?
They did, for all speeds. But the height of that peak in the stir zone was very dependent on the TRS.
Okay, so what was the peak hardness for the winner? 860 RPM.
At 860 RPM, the stir zone reached a maximum hardness of about 156 HV. Now, remember the base metals. The hard AA 2014 was 162 HV, and the soft AA 52 was only 78 HV.
Wow, so 156 HV is almost as hard as the original strong alloy and way harder than the soft one. That's impressive recovery.
It really is. But as the speed increased, that peak stir zone hardness dropped. At 1160 RPM, it was lower, and at 1460 RPM, it was significantly lower.
Why the drop? Is that linked to the microstructure changes?
Directly. The excessive heat at higher speeds wasn't just coarsening the grains, it was also dissolving or coarsening those crucial strengthening precipitates, those little aluro cankers we talked about. They lost their strengthening effect, and the material literally became softer, easier to indent.
Okay, so hardness drops. What about the main event? Tensile strength, pulling the joint apart until it breaks.
Here, the trend was crystal clear. A strong negative correlation between TRS and ultimate tensile strength, UTS. Faster spin equals lower strength.
Give us the best result again. 860 RPM.
At 860 RPM, the Jane achieved a maximum UTS of 211 MPa. Now, how good is that? You compare it to the weaker of the two base metals, the AA5042, which had a UTS of 225 MPa.
So 211 out of 225, that's really good, right?
That's excellent. It represents a joint efficiency of 93.8%. You've joined two very different metals, and the seam is almost as strong as the weaker starting material. That's a successful weld.
Amazing. And what happened at the highest speed, 1460 RPM?
Big drop. The UTS fell to just 172 MPa. The joint efficiency plummeted to 76.4%.
Just by spinning the tool faster, that's a huge difference in performance, almost 20% weaker.
It is, and the yield strength, the point where the material starts to permanently deform, showed a similar drop, going from 181 MPa at 860 RPM down to 155 MPa at 1460 RPM. The whole joint just becomes weaker and less resistant to deformation.
That difference in strength is stark, but you mentioned something even more critical earlier.
Yeah.
How it fails. Ductile versus brittle. Tell us about that.
This is maybe the most crucial part for any engineer designing with these joints. At the optimal 860 RPM, when they pulled the sample apart, they examined the fracture surface. It showed clear signs of ductile fracture.
Ductile meaning it stretches before breaking.
Yes. Characterized by features like micro dimples. It indicates the material absorbed energy, deformed, stretched. It gives you some warning before catastrophic failure. And importantly, the break didn't happen right in the weld center. It occurred off to the side in the heat-affected zone near the weaker AA5052 parent metal.
Which is where you'd expect it to fail if the weld itself is strong. That sounds like a predictable, safer failure mode.
Exactly. It's the preferred mode. Now contrast that with the higher speeds, especially 1460 RPM.
What changed?
The failure mode transitioned. It became a mixed mode fracture, showing significant brittle characteristics. Instead of nice dimples, you start seeing features like flat facets, tear ridges, and voids. It suggests the material failed more suddenly with less warning, less energy absorption.
Less forgiving.
Much less forgiving. And this correlated with a big drop in elongation, basically how much the sample stretched before breaking. It went from over 16% elongation at 860 RPM down to about 10% at 1460 RPM.
And where did it break at that high speed?
Critically, at 1460 RPM, the fracture path often ran through the stir zone itself. Because the excessive heat had coarsened the grains and weakened the microstructure within the weld nugget became the weakest link.
So the weld itself failed, and it failed in a brittle way. That sounds like the worst case scenario.
It really is. You've gone from a strong, predictable joint to a weaker, unpredictable one just by adjusting the rotation speed within a seemingly reasonable range.
This has been incredibly revealing. It really underscores how FSW, while powerful, is not just plug and play. That single parameter, TRS, is absolutely critical.
Without a doubt, the key takeaway from this research is the absolute necessity of optimizing TRS, especially when joining dissimilar materials like these. For this specific pair, AA2014T6 and AA5052H32, the evidence points overwhelmingly to 860 RPM being the sweet spot.
Right. That speed delivered the goods. Minimal defects, fine grains, maximum hardness in the weld zone, nearly matching the stronger parent metal, and that excellent 93.8% joint efficiency.
And the core reason why 860 RPM worked so well seems to be that delicate thermal balance. It provided enough frictional heat and mechanical work for the necessary plastic deformation, mixing, and dynamic recrystallization.
But not too much heat.
But crucially, not so much excessive heat that it caused significant grain coarsening or dissolved those vital strengthening precipitates. Those precipitates are key to the 2014 strength, and preserving them is paramount. The higher speeds just cook them away.
It's fascinating. The difference between a near-perfect joint and one that's significantly weaker and fails badly comes down to controlling that heat input via rotation speed.
It really highlights the sensitivity of the process.
Which brings us to our final thought for you, our listeners, to consider. This research showed that a relatively small change in processing speed from an optimal 860 RPM to a faster 1460 RPM didn't just reduce strength, it fundamentally shifted the failure mode from predictable ductile tearing to unpredictable brittle fracture.
A huge shift in safety terms.
Exactly. So if the integrity of critical components, maybe an aircraft part, maybe an electric vehicle battery case, relies so heavily on achieving these microscopic structural features measured in millionths of a meter, how much of a safety margin do engineers need to build in to account for the tiny, real-world variations that inevitably happen in manufacturing process speeds on a factory floor?
That's the question, isn't it? How do you guarantee that microscopic perfection translates to macroscopic safety every single time?
Something to think about. Thank you for joining us for the deep dive. We'll explore more research next time.